What episode? This is Radio Free Thinker, episode 82, 83.
Welcome to Radio Free Thinker, the radio show podcast that promotes skepticism and critical thinking, right here on CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver. My name is Ethan, your free thinking historian and executive director of CFI Vancouver.
And I'm Don, your political science philosopher.
Hi, this is Chloe.
And I'm Daniel, UBC Free Thinkers Club president.
Welcome, everybody. How was your weekend?
My tongue apparently was a little tied at the intro of the show. Sorry about that. Episode 83. Great 83. I like 83. It's a nice number.
83 is a great number.
Well, it's like, you know, three times, right? Because if you split 8 in half, it looks like two threes have been put together. So, I mean, I'm sure there's some Masonic symbolism in there somewhere.
Well, before we go into the numerology of 83, the episode itself is actually going to be very, very good. We have a really neat show. We're going to be talking about potential alien ambassadors, habitable planets out there in the universe, and eventually we're going to get to whether or not atheists know more about religion than the religious. And then we're going to test that right here on Radio Free Thinker. It's going to be very interesting.
We don't have any controls.
Well, I have the controls and you are my subjects. That's how it's going to work. So I actually had a very interesting week. I did a talk for the New Bright Lights lecture series that none of you guys bothered to attend. Thanks.
I was working.
Class. Oh. Dawn.
I was visiting the planet Gion.
Please. No.
Well, anyway, it was fantastic. I did a very good job. People were very happy with me.
Good, I'm glad.
It was very good. Well, why don't we head on to today's show? Let's start things right out with aliens. And let's get into this alien ambassador story, because I'm sure it's been going around a bit. The world got very excited, briefly, for the possibility that we actually are going to have alien contact, because the UN appointed an alien ambassador. Isn't that fantastic?
No way.
Way. Well, actually, no way. Because we were all horribly disappointed because it turns out the story is not true.
How did such a story get released then?
Well, see, the interesting thing is the Sunday Times in London reported that the UN had named Maslan Othman official alien greeter for the planet Earth. The article went on to say, quote, at the upcoming conference in Britain, which is going to be the Royal Society conference, Othman is expected to tell delegates that the recent discovery of hundreds of planets around the other stars has made the detection of extraterrestrial life more likely than ever before. And that means that the United Nations must be ready to coordinate humanity's response to any first contact. The article also mentions that Othman is, quote, also in charge of deciding what to do if a deadly asteroid is found to be on collision course with Earth.
It's a lot of responsibility for one guy.
Girl.
Girl. I should have read the story.
Yes.
Where does she derive this authority from?
Well, apparently.
Assuming it was actually true.
Yes. Well, the UN appointed her. Well, it turns out she actually is appointed by the UN for various responsibilities. She is in charge of informing the UN on progress with space exploration. If there was an asteroid on a collision course, she would be the one to brief the UN. But the whole alien thing, not true. The Guardian has reported that well, is not really happening. It turns out that the Royal Society conference that's happening in Britain didn't know anything about supposed alien contact. They were kind of like, well, we don't have anything to do with this. And Othman herself actually said, it sounds really cool, but I have to deny it. So all the conspiracy folks out there are calling shenanigans on this whole thing, and they're suggesting that some incredible cover-up of massive proportions, all the while ignoring the possibility that some writer at the Sunday Times was either wrong or made it up. And I mean, really, if the UN wanted to keep this a secret, would the Sunday Times be the ones to leak the story?
Well, the Weekly World News, I think, would be more likely, or the National Enquirer. It's more their story.
Yeah, possibly, yeah. They do have a good track record of breaking extraterrestrial hybrid stories.
Isn't it true, though, that the real story behind this is that she is an alien ambassador and that this leaked out incorrectly?
I'm sure that some people believe that she's actually one of those reptile people.
Yes.
Where are the reptile people from?
I don't know. From the center of the Earth, aren't they?
No, actually, they're supposed to be aliens. If you're a Raelian, you believe that aliens came down and that the human race is an experiment, which honestly, it makes more sense than a lot of religious stories, although it's not really real either. But, but yeah, so that's where the aliens are the reptilians are supposed to be aliens. Some probably have them center of the earthers, you know. Some people believe the earth is actually hollow and inside is another world, and that's where a lot of these...
It reminds me of a Doctor Who episode where they had these lizard people living in the center of the earth. It was very, very neat. But anyway, getting back to the story here. See, what you have here, I think, is we have a real scientist who was giving a real talk for the Royal Society, but she was giving it about near-Earth objects like asteroids and possible collisions, that sort of thing. She's also the head of an extraterrestrial affairs position at the UN, but again, it's about near-Earth objects, not aliens. So the story got twisted all around, and because of some sloppy journalism, we get a report that she's an ambassador to aliens. So I think we need to ratchet up the critical thinking at the Sunday Times.
There was one interesting aspect to this, I thought. At the very end of the story, they said one of the reasons why it was important that they had this ambassador is that in the past they had Kurt Waldheim, who was Secretary General of the UN. And then it said something about how it was discovered he was secretly a Nazi, an enthusiastic Nazi from World War II. And I'm just, that just struck me as a really tangential comment to have.
The other reminds me of, remember in Contact, how the aliens sent back a message and it was actually like Hitler's speech?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was a good time. Well, let's move on to extra planets.
Well, we haven't been receiving any transmissions from aliens recently, but we have discovered a planet. I haven't done anything about this, but scientists have discovered a planet which could potentially support life. For real this time. It seems to, reports like these come out every so often, but this one they think is actually for real. So there's a star about 20 light years away that can be found in Libra called Gliese 581. It's a dim red dwarf. And there's a planet in its Goldilocks zone, and the Goldilocks zone is the sort of habitable zone, the planet's distance from the sun is neither too hot or too cold, hence Goldilocks. And there's a planet about the mass is three times the size of Earth that is in this zone. And they seem to think that, obviously our information is 20 years old, but they seem to think that this could be the type of planet that we could land on and live on comfortably in 1,000 years when we have the technology to do such a thing.
And the whole three times the mass aspect, I mean, that's going to require an Iron Man suit or something?
No, well,
I would assume so.
I think one of the things, I mean, this is probably a bad analogy, but we get increased atmospheric pressure when we go underwater, right? So in a loose analogy, I think it'd be kind of like going, I don't know, hundreds of feet or something underwater where you have an increased body weight, right? So I think actually one of the cool things about this, in a way, is really it's a bizarre planet, right? I mean, it's three times the size. But, I mean, its orbital path is 38 days. I think it's about 38 days. It orbits around a red dwarf, which is why it can be so close to the sun and not be exactly like Mercury. There are, I believe, five other planets in the solar system. So they've discovered other ones that were in it. It's tidally locked to its sun, which means it has one side is always hot, one side's always cold. But because of that, as when you get into the twilight zone, not the show, but the actual area between light and cold, somewhere there's a gradual gradient of heat. And so at some point there's going to be something in there.
One thing I liked from this is the scientists actually explained that perfect area as the short sleeve zone.
That's funny.
But there is some bad things. Although this planet, in theory, is something that we could go to, we don't actually know if it's going to have if it has an atmosphere. It probably does. It has greater density, but because it doesn't actually transect the sun, so the way they discover these planets usually is it causes a wobble in the sun, right? And if this is wobbles out, there's got to be a planet there. Ideally, if the planet itself goes in front of the sun, you can actually get a spectrograph of its atmosphere, and you can know what it is. But the way this particular system is lined up, it never passes between us and the sun, so we'll never actually know if it's got an oxygen atmosphere or a methane atmosphere or a cyanide atmosphere or what have you. And it is, what is it, eight? How many light years away was it?
20.
So which
it could have disappeared by now. We wouldn't know about it.
Well, the other question is, if one side is always facing the sun and one side is always not facing the sun, if there is water on this planet, it might either be evaporated or frozen.
Well, that's interesting that you say that. And going back to what Don was saying about the atmosphere, you wouldn't, according to this Sky and Telescope article, which will be cited on our blog, you would need an atmosphere of only about 1% as thick as Earth's to distribute enough heat from the day side to the night side so that the atmosphere wouldn't freeze out and there wouldn't be solid crust on the night side. So you could have water on both sides, theoretically, depending on...
Are they saying that it's naturally the heat is going to diffuse, or that we'd have to...
That's an interesting question. I will look while someone else talks.
I assume it's naturally. If you think about sort of the laws of physics here, if one side is constantly being heated up, the atmosphere will expand and it'll cause like winds into the other side.
Actually, I'm going to go yes and no on that one, because that's the thing. Because you're going to have the one side that's always hot and one side that's always cold. So you will get weather in the twilight zone, because it'll be a mixing of these two.
Yeah.
But you won't actually get weather on the hot side or the cold side because they're relatively stable. And because it's tidally locked, you don't have rotation, which is another form of atmospheric mixing. So I think you would get sort of monsoon conditions along this twilight zone. But because of the atmospheric stability for the rest of it, you wouldn't get the drying out or the freezing up of the atmosphere in general.
Hmm. I'm just curious, because wouldn't the constant exposure to the sunlight irradiate that part of the planet and basically kill everything on that side?
Yes. Oh. But only in the central part of it. That's the whole point of this twilight zone.
So it's going to be like this big burnt hole.
Yeah.
And then like increasingly...
There just seems to be a very large ozone layer.
I think maybe another analogy to think about it is we have ice on the poles, right? So, in essence, our atmosphere is frozen at the poles. But as you go further away from the poles, it changes. Well, this is sort of the same idea, but it's on its side, right? So North America, Central North America would be hot, scorched, no life as we know it could be. Central Asia would be frozen, no life as we know it. But as you got towards the poles, you'd get the mixing of the hot and the cold, so to speak, and you'd get a moderate. So it wouldn't be too much direct sunlight, so you wouldn't scorch anything, but it wouldn't be so cold as to freeze anything.
So more or less the opposite of how our planet is laid out.
Yeah. Actually, one of the things I thought was kind of interesting about this was there was an article I was reading in the Taiyi, which is a good lefty newspaper, magazine article, website, what have you, that was talking about how this is horrible news. I'm going, how could this possibly be seen as horrible news? And the basic gist of it is that, one, we can never, ever go there. It's very pessimistic about our ability to go there because technology doesn't exist. It's so far away, yada, yada. And that as long as we think that there are these planets out there that we could live on, that we won't give a rat's butt about this planet, and we'll pollute and we'll destroy this planet because we think, oh, we can always go to another planet. And it was really kind of depressing.
That's very...
We treated this planet horribly before we even knew we could go into space.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's, yeah. Plus, I mean, again, it's 20 light years away.
It is 20 light years away.
So that's like 1,000 years of space travel.
With relativistic effects and near light speed travel, it wouldn't actually feel like that long.
I learned something too, because apparently this article, to prove how impossible it was, said it would be less than 500 years to get there. And you would need a generational ship. And it had something that you would need something like 28 million megatons of energy to get the people there. And then you would need another, like, 30 megatons of energy to get the energy there.
It'll be a while, in short.
I was impressed at how much technological information was in it, but it was, basically depressing.
Well, why don't we go to commercial break? We'll be back with some more on Radio Free Thinker.
This is Phil Plait of BadAstronomy.com, and you're listening to CITR 101.9 FM for UBC in Vancouver, British Columbia.
CITR has more friends than ever before. We've partnered with tons of local businesses to bring you great discounts in the communities where you live, work, and play. Maybe Main Street is your main drag. Present your Friends of CITR card at Red Cat Records, Lucky's Comics, Devil May Wear, Thriller, Blim, The Kiss Store, The Wallflower Modern Diner, RX Comics, Antisocial Skateboard Shop, Vinyl Records, Regional Assembly of Text, and Twig and Hottie to receive fabulous discounts. So become a CITR member, get a free friends card, and feel the love.
And we're back on Radio Free Thinker. So we have some updates now, right?
We do, actually. In an episode a few weeks ago, we talked about the Pope and the Pope's involvement with legal trouble with regards to pedophilia in the Catholic Church. One of the big court cases was the one in Milwaukee involving the School for the Deaf. And apparently, what's his name here? Mike Finnegan, who is an attorney for a Chicago-based plaintiff, well, one of the children who was abused, apparently has served the Pope with what's called an incremental. It's part of the whole process of suing someone in Milwaukee about the allegations, about his cover-up of the Catholic priest who did all this diddling. It contends that the three men included Joseph Ratzinger, who's now the Pope, Cardinal Baritone, who was the Secretary of State for the Vatican, and the current Secretary of State, Cardinal Angelo Sodano, that the allegations that sexual abuse in Milwaukee was covered up by them, and in essence, they were part of the whole thing. Apparently, the Vatican isn't expected to go along with this particular legal procedure. It's considered to be a long shot. But I thought it was quite interesting. This isn't the first time the Vatican has been charged. And some of the things that they do, besides, you know, dragging out in court and all that, is because the Vatican is apparently an official country, and we've debated that here, it insists that the documentation be translated into its official language, which is Latin, which I thought was just a curious thing. But apparently this incremental, which again, it's kind of like a summons, from what I understand, right? It's requesting information so that you can proceed with the lawsuit, was given on September 24th. But there's been no follow up from the Vatican. Just says, you know, our legal team is looking at it. We don't really, you know, don't think this is an us thing.
Right.
So I just you know, some people said that the Pope should be charged, if not with child abuse, because again, no one's saying that he actually did anything himself, but as part of a conspiracy to cover it up. It looks like, at least in Milwaukee, someone is trying to follow this particular...
You know, maybe we kind of talked about this before, but from the angle of, could you arrest the Pope? Maybe you could arrest some of his lackeys, for lack of a better word. I mean, he's the head of the state, but I'm sure there's a precedent for having somebody extradited, is that the word, to another nation to face criminal charges that they committed in that nation. So maybe they shouldn't go after the Pope. Maybe they should go after some of the cardinals and bishops who participated in the cover-up.
I think the best, though, that can happen with that is to get local bishops. Right? I mean, these bishops here are actually part of the Vatican, so they're actually considered, I guess, part of the diplomatic corps, right? Secretary of State and all that. But I believe the Bishop of Boston was sued. He wasn't charged, but he was sued for the child abuse that went on in Boston, and that's because he was an American bishop. Right. So, as they say, it's a long shot. I also was reading something about the Tribunal for Crimes Against State and Religion. I think I'm butchering that. But it was a group that presented a summons to the Pope in England. But it was just. I looked up this group's name, right, and I'll have it on the website because I'll find it again. But it was just a group of disgruntled people who said this. But they had a really nice sounding name. I thought it was some part of the UN. And ooh, this is a good one. But it was just someone saying, "Listen, we're summoning him out to say, listen, you're a bad person," which we all know he was one.
Right. Okay. Well, that's good. Daniel, what else do we have to update people on?
Yeah. Back in May, we talked about the May flash crash, which was where the stock market, the New York Stock Exchange, went down something like 10% in 5 to 10 minutes, which is more or less unheard of in the past. So basically when we were talking about it then, the details in the investigation hadn't happened, so the investigation by the SEC is now done, so figured I'd update people. Basically, they found that the ultimate cause was a $4.1 billion trade by one firm. $4.1 billion is not actually an unheard of amount to be traded. The one key difference, though, is they traded it all in about 20 minutes rather than 5 hours, which is sort of the more average for transactions that large. And it basically, mixed with already very pessimistic market sentiments because of the sovereign debt crisis in Europe, basically it caused everyone to freak out by seeing such a large selling of stocks, and basically combined with computerized trading that saw that a bunch of stuff was being sold, and it quickly just dumped a ton of stocks onto the market.
So in essence, then, investors need to be less hypersensitive to change in their environment.
Yeah, it's sort of hard to point a finger just at investors in general, because a lot of the time, and for most of it was computerized trading. But it's certainly a wake-up call to many people who rely on computerized models that they might be able to make a lot of money under normal conditions, but they can easily screw things up once things get a little away from the normal.
Well, yeah, just look at Terminator. I mean,
yeah. So what does this tell you about rational choice theory in the economy? Is this
computers don't do it?
Computers are completely irrational.
It's certainly. If anyone actually truly subscribed to pure rational price theory for stock markets, clearly this is some pretty strong evidence that it doesn't, because I really doubt the actual value of these stocks dropped 10% in 5 minutes and then shot up like 6-7% again in the next 5 minutes. But it does put to question that.
So, actually, speaking of updates, I've got one. I was going to save it for next week, but I don't think there's a lot of material here, and we're kind of catching up on some of the stories we've done in the past. Recently, there's been some controversy over Conservative MP Maxine Baer, who complained that apparently that she had received thousands of complaints about the intrusiveness of the census, and that was one of the big reasons why they got rid of the mandatory sentence. We did a show about that. But apparently, through Freedom of Information, the CBC has learned that according to internal documents, they'd only received the usual, quoting here, "We got a standard about 25 to 30 complaints a year. In fact, the year in question, there was about 22 complaints, and they had about 160 that thought that, you know, the subject matter was too much, but only about 22 thought it was intrusive." And that, you know, I mean, the way politicians just pull numbers out of their butt, for lack of a better word, and how the census is important, because it's actually even keeping decent information about this number in itself, which I thought was quite interesting.
There's a question on the census that says, "Do you hate the census?"
No. But they do keep
the
track.
The Census Bureau.
I see.
Keeps track of complaints against them.
Yeah. Yeah. Actually, you know, it's funny too because there were over 300 complaints that were received about the company that did the actual data, like that was doing data collection, which is nothing to do with the census itself. It's part of the privatization. Lockheed Martin apparently was one of the people who did the data collection, and they got a lot of complaints from them. It doesn't exactly say what those complaints were about, but it was just, I don't know,
the aerospace company did it? That seems weird.
Well, yes, you see, yes, they're not aerospace, they're future technology.
Oh, okay.
Future technology.
The census is very futuristic.
It is very futuristic.
Yeah.
Let's go to a commercial break on Radio Free Thinker. We'll be back with some more after this.
I swear to God, I'm not wearing just my underwear right now. This is Beth. Hi, this is Beth Ditto from The Gossip, and you're listening to CITR 101.9 FM Vancouver. No, yeah, this is the best thing in the world. You guys are going to be blown away.
Yeah, the state of hip-hop right now, man, as far as the way I see it, I think right now, hip-hop is advancing as far as skills. You got brothers, you know what I'm saying, getting, like, more witty.
There ain't nobody to be pretty for. Let it rattle, let the clatter kill him, let the cataclysm wash. Who really listens? Precision with a verse draws a crowd. Draw a line between an easy melody and peace of mind.
You got DJs doing all kind of crazy shit on the turntables. I like where it's going, and I like, you know what I'm saying, the creative process that brothers is trying to take it to right now.
Rally Rails and Brendan Butter in the place to be. Crimes and Treasons Radio, 101.9 FM, Vancouver. CITR.ca, every Tuesday, 9 till 11.
Dynamite!
And we're back on Radio Free Thinker. So our main topic today is going to be whether or not atheists know more about religion than the religious.
Ooh, let me guess. Yes.
Yes.
Thanks,
well, that was a good topic. Let's move on. No, actually, a recent study by the Pew Forum in the United States has shown that atheists and other non-believers are more knowledgeable than believers when it comes to religion. And the story has provoked quite a bit of discussion around the internet. And several people are asking some very interesting questions. Namely, why do non-believers know more about religion than the religious? I mean,
well, you know, I would think it's obvious that, what, besides genetically being smarter in a superior way, isn't there some correlation to the fact that people who are atheists and agnostics also tend to be better educated, and that if you were better educated, you would innately know more, even if it's about something you don't really believe in yourself?
Well, that's probably an aspect of it. But let's look closely at the study here, because maybe they got it wrong. Who knows? This was a nationwide poll conducted from May 19th through June 6th in 2010. It was among 3,412 Americans aged 18 and older, so a decent-sized sample there. It was on landlines and cell phones in English and Spanish. And people were asked 32 questions based on general knowledge religion. Jews, Mormons, and atheists and agnostics were oversampled to allow analysis of these relatively small groups. So that's interesting. The groups asked included atheists and agnostics, Jews, Mormons, white evangelical Protestants, white Catholics, white mainland Protestants, nothing in particular, black Protestants, and Hispanic Catholics.
I find it odd that nothing in particular is listed before two very large religious groups in the United States.
Well, that's just the way I wrote it down.
Oh,
it's
okay,
not like
mind,
they rank it in order of preference or anything. The three highest, as in people who knew the most on these general knowledge questions, were atheist agnostics at 20.9, Jewish people at 20.5, and Mormons at 20.3.
Before we go on, what's mainline? Sorry.
Mainland.
You said mainland, yeah, but do you mean...
I assume that just means standard, run-of-the-mill, Protestant...
So not evangelical, but not...
Not evangelical, Catholic. But not Catholic.
Okay.
Now, the three lowest results were Hispanic Catholic at 11.6, Black Protestant at 13.4, and nothing in particular at 15.2, and the rest were somewhere in the middle.
I find it interesting that the three groups with the highest scores are the ones that had to be oversampled.
That is interesting, isn't it?
I have a theory about that, but I'll let you get through more data first.
All right, sounds good. Atheists and agnostics and the Jewish scored particularly well on questions relating to world religion, whereas Mormons and white evangelical Protestants scored the best on the Bible and Christianity, so not surprising there. But there were some kind of shocking results as well. 45% of Catholics in the United States do not know that their church teaches that the bread and wine used in communion do not merely symbolize, but actually become the body and blood of Christ.
Doesn't this lead, though, to the whole idea that, you know, the technical doctrine of a church is often ignored by the practitioners because your average person isn't crazy? You know, so I mean, you're right. The church technically says that, you know, it's the literally transforms into the blood and flesh of Christ. But of course, your average person on the street says, well, that's ridiculous. So it must be symbolic. And so that's where the knowledge gap comes in.
Well, my understanding is that Protestants actually know that the sacraments are symbolic. Even like it's a pretty essential part of church life. Knowing what the sacraments symbolize. So I actually do find that number fairly surprising, that wouldn't be a standard thing for a Catholic to know.
Listen to this. 53% of Protestants cannot correctly identify Martin Luther as the person whose writings and actions inspired the Protestant Reformation. The person who founded their religion, 53% of them are unaware of.
Okay, and again, I don't know why I'm trying to knock this, because I you know, but at the same time, it's like saying, well, who invented democracy, you know, and criticizing because you couldn't remember that Pericles. Actually, I don't know, Ethan, you're a historian, who invented democracy?
Well, I don't know if anyone actually, like, invented it, like, you know, had, like, a chalkboard and was, like, checking it out, and then was like, no, I'm going to erase that number right in that one. That one works. Okay, here we go. I think that it was probably perfected over many years. It's not a...
You know, and I mean, I would be in trouble if someone asked me who invented communism. I mean, everyone thinks of Karl Marx as starting communism, but communist ideas were around before he was there. I don't know. I'm glad to know that atheists are smarter, but at the same time, I don't know if I would... criticize Protestants for not knowing Martin Luther as a member of the leader of their Protestant movement.
An interesting question would be to ask Lutheran Protestants specifically who Martin Luther is.
Yeah, I would hope...
deduct that from the name of their religion.
Yeah.
They might have thought it was Lex Luther.
Yeah, that's very funny. So there's a few more other interesting little things to notice here. For example, when it comes to teaching religion in schools, 89% correctly know that teachers are not allowed to lead public school classes in prayer.
And the other 10% are from Texas.
I guess so. But among the questions most often answered incorrectly is whether public school teachers are permitted to read from the Bible as an example of literature. Only a third along these lines, just 36% of the public, knows that comparative religion classes may be taught in public schools.
Now, again, isn't this now maybe the Tea Party and Republican rhetoric coming rearing its head, you know, because they're trying to gin up the base and all that. They said, well, they're trying to, you know, turn you all into Muslims or something. I mean, you hear stupid things come out. So, again, I think that's another one where the comparativeness of intelligence is important. But for those people who got it wrong, if you watch Fox News, you're going to get it wrong.
Well, the thing that I thought was the takeaway from this particular block of questions is that many Americans think the constitutional restrictions on religion in public schools are actually tighter than what they really are, which is, I think is kind of telling. So we're kind of asking, so what are the major factors in religious knowledge? The survey suggests that educational attainment, how much schooling an individual has completed, is the single best predictor of religious knowledge. College graduates get nearly 8 more questions right on average than the people with a high school education or less. Other significant factors seem to include participation in religion and the religion one does. Reading scripture, attending regular religious service, discussing religion with family and friends. All of this increases your performance on this quiz. Also increasing your knowledge is a previous background in religious youth groups. Those who attended private schools are more likely to do better, although private religious schools are no better than those who provided private non-religious schools. So private schools, just in general, provide better performance. Okay, there we go. When it comes to education, Jews, atheists, agnostics have the highest levels of education attainment on average. Not terribly surprising, which particularly explains their performance on the religious knowledge survey. However, even after controlling for levels of education and other key demographic traits, race, age, gender, religion, significant differences in religious knowledge persist among adherents of various faith traditions. Agnostics, atheists, Jews, and Mormons still have the highest levels of religious knowledge.
When they say Jewish on this particular survey, you may not know this, I have no idea. Do you know if they mean religious Jews or people who are just culturally Jewish who may also be atheists or agnostics themselves?
I don't know how they've broken down the Jewish faith, but in previous polls that the Pew Forum has done, they generally just sort of combine every religious version of Judaism into one category because it's only like 1.9% of the American population anyway.
Right. Okay.
So they just usually combine it all together. When education and other demographic traits are held equal, whites score better than minorities on the survey's religious knowledge questions. Men score somewhat better than women, and people outside the South score better than Southerners.
Big surprise!
Which I think suggests there's some sort of economic or cultural factor at play in all this. In addition to questions about religious knowledge, the survey included 9 general knowledge questions on history, politics, science, and literature for comparative purposes. These show, for example, that about 6 in 10 Americans can name the vice president of the United States and understand that lasers do not work by focusing sound waves.
What? But I thought it was loud amplifications. Okay.
Okay. More than 7 in 10 correctly associate Susan B. Anthony with the movement to give women the right to vote, while just 42% know that Herman Melville was the author of Moby Dick.
He was also a rampant socialist, too, I believe.
Really?
He wrote a few other books. They never took off, which much to his own decry. But anyhow, I'm deflecting this from our trajectory.
Right. Well, you know, this actually reminds me, back to episode 54, we discussed a survey done by the Pew Forum on which religious group had the richest members. You may remember that. When I started reading their latest bits here, I wondered if there was any correlation between wealth and knowledge. Now, if you recall, that the wealthiest were the Jews, who had 46% of their members in the $100,000 an above range, followed closely by Hinduism at 43%. And the religion with the highest percentage of members in the lowest income level were the historically black churches, which I guess runs congruent to the mainland black Protestant
correct me if I'm wrong, but looking over this, Hindus weren't actually part of this study, right? I mean,
no.
So, us here in the studio had done the Pew quiz. They have a short little 15 question quiz that you can do, and of course, I did the best. But in that, I noticed there was a question on Buddhism, Islam, Hinduism, right? So that seemed to be much more rounded. I wonder why they didn't include that in this particular study, and that goes in with your hinting here at Hinduism being a well-off religion.
Well, I think also because they did say that they did some, you know, flexing of their statistical abilities to make the certain groups seem larger than they actually were. I suspect the number of Hindus in America is quite small, I would imagine. Maybe they just figured it was too small to even bother to include. I don't know, actually. We should phone them and ask them. Now, with the Jews and the Hindus having the most wealth, or the most wealthy members, is actually a more accurate way of saying it, the study suggested it was linked with education. Now, that also syncs up with the other study that the Pew Forum did. So, interesting enough, the study indicates that 31% of those with less than a high school education are part of an evangelical Protestant denomination, which is interesting because white evangelical Protestants were the fourth most knowledgeable group. So perhaps this is not, the education tie-in is not as nailed down as it appears.
Well, for those of us who went to the Greta Christina talk at UBC, didn't she share with us some figures about how education is not necessarily linked to... Wait, I'm thinking of a completely different topic. Please ignore this comment. Moving on.
Okay. Well, maybe what you were trying to say, though, is wasn't she discussing whether or not education plays a role in religious belief?
Yeah, religious belief, not religious knowledge.
That's, right. That's yeah. Well, I mean, see, the interesting thing is, the authors of the study themselves speculate that one of the reasons why atheists know more about religion than believers is because atheists spend more time thinking about.
Well, you would think that would come into it because, sadly, the default condition in most societies is to be religious because it's part of the tradition. It's historically part of what's there. And that if you are going against the tradition, in a way, you need a reason for it, which is why you tend to know more about the topic matter in general. No?
Well, I think that's actually pretty reasonable. I think that, I mean, we can't say that education and affluence does not play a role, because it most certainly must. But, you know, I think we can also think about it from the point of view that a lot of atheists, maybe more in the United States, come from religious backgrounds. So they probably go through a period of, you know, deep soul-searching, and they probably do a lot of research. They probably dive into their holy books and other holy books to say, you know, what do I really believe in?
I also wonder, too, because you mentioned that the South has a diminished knowledge as well. And so there's sort of the secondary effects or confounding factors. So although it may be poor people in general have less knowledge because they don't have the education, but if you live in an area where there is a lot of poverty, even if you are more well off, because your community, the society in general, is sort of impoverished, that also diminishes your ability to learn more. That might be why atheists often are seen to be in places like New York and all that, where there's higher levels of overall affluence as opposed to the depressed areas of the South.
Yeah, and also depending on how tolerant your environment is to deep questions about religion. I mean, I would imagine that the South is not as tolerant as New York or Los Angeles or the other sort of typically considered, you know, lefty type places. So, I mean, that might play a role as well. I think it also is a factor that people who do have deep religious convictions, they may feel a bit more hostility towards further education. They may feel that, well, I got my faith, I got my, you know, my job, I don't need anything else.
I also wonder how much it plays into it, too, and this is an ad hoc, perhaps, criticism. But often, people who are religious are, in a sense, abdicating their questioning power to their faith, to the church, to whatever, right? And, I mean, one of the things about being religious is to not question the word, and that makes you innately incurious, especially with regards to religion, because you're supposed to follow the doctrine, and you may try, well, I guess that fails, doesn't it?
No, I think that's that. You might be on something with that. I mean, like, if your holy book says this book has all the answers, why are you going to go read something about Buddhism?
Right. Or worse than that, if your preacher is telling you the word of God, I only have to read it myself.
Why bother reading the Bible?
Yeah, and it does even say in the study that people who read Scripture, read their Bibles on a daily basis, or however often they do that sort of thing, does make a significant impact on how well they perform on this test. I mean, like, what do you guys think, like, in general, though? Like, do you think that there's something to the fact that atheists being just, in general, smarter? Not never mind knowing more about religion, but just, in general, being smarter.
Smarter is a really hard topic to entangle yourself with. I mean, what you can get into all sorts of irritating conversations about what defines knowledge and intelligence. So I don't know.
What does define knowledge and intelligence, by the way?
This is my point. I would say that atheists are perhaps more knowledgeable because they've sought atheism generally, tend to seek information generally. Yes, Dan.
If you look at IQs, atheists generally tend to have higher IQs. And I'm not going to try and say that IQ is a perfect measure of intelligence or anything, but it's one of the best objective ways we can look at that. And from that, at the very least, we can say that atheists tend to be more intelligent.
See, because I've been very contrary the whole show, sorry about that. I think we're confounding two different issues here. I mean, I think that people with religious convictions can be just as smart and intelligent as we are, but it somewhat depends on where you apply that. I mean, one of the things we've talked about many times is compartmentalization and cognitive dissonance. So you can be really intelligent I don't know, mathematician and a devout Christian, if you want, and saying that you're smarter or dumber. I think one of the things you're getting here, though, is one of the things that, why are more skeptics atheists than non-skeptics? And part of the reason is, if you are the kind of person who questions things, if you are the kind of person who demands a certain level of evidence, then you are going to have a greater propensity to believe one thing over another. And in this case, and forgive my bias here, the fact that religion is false and non-religion or science is true, because there is a sort of an objective truth matter at the heart of this, you're going to get a tendency for one to fall, for skeptics to fall in one area and non-skeptics to fall in another. And this atheism is just a reflection of that. If you're a curious individual, if you want to know more, you're just naturally going to have a greater tendency to it, irrespective of whether you're actually smarter or not. I've met a number of atheists and skeptics who I would not call the brightest bulbs in the room, but they were curious minds, mm-hmm. and that seemed to be more important.
Well, you know, getting back to sort of the test that they gave, we all took that test. Most of us did pretty well.
What was your score, Daniel?
13.
Ooh. Oh, that's too bad. Well, anyway.
13 is well above average.
Well, sadly, yes, it is. But I personally felt some of these questions were a bit overgeneral.
Well, it was a short quiz. It was 15 questions.
Right.
Now, Daniel did do good. It's not as good as me.
Well, I think, you know, it's not really fair to say that this is an accurate read on religion because there's just so general knowledge.
Oh, come on.
I have prepared, however, some more in-depth questions, and we are going to see how well a couple atheists do after this commercial break on Rigor Free Thinker.
Are you a UBC student taking first-year economics, math, chemistry, or physics?
That stuff is hard.
Are you feeling like you need some tutoring? That's okay, because the AMS offers free and appointment tutoring for students in these subjects.
Whoa! How does it work?
It's on a first-come, first-served basis, and there's no need to sign up. Just show up with your books and your questions.
Whoa! When does it happen?
Monday to Thursday from 3 to 7 at the Sub Pacific Spirit Cafeteria, located beside the Starbucks.
Whoa!
A+, here I come.
We're back on Radio Free Thinker. So we're talking about, do atheists know a lot about religion? Now, I have prepared 5 general knowledge questions, but I've ramped up the difficulty a little bit.
You're such a typical atheist, thinking you know better than everyone else, and that the pew, with all their important people, couldn't do it nearly as good as you, so you had to come up with your own. Okay. Give me your best shot.
Here's the protocol for this, right? I'm going to ask the question. You guys are going to write down your answer, so I know you're not cheating, even though I don't really care. And then I'll tell you the answer and then make fun of you for getting it wrong.
Awesome. I'm ready.
Okay. Question number 1. What is the name of Job's wife? So you guys can start scribbling down, and I'll just amuse the audience by talking about how great I am. By the way, that talk that I gave at the New Brights Light Lecture, oh, it was awesome. Hopefully they'll have it on video soon and you guys can check it out. So what do you guys got? Don, what's your answer?
Well, these were multiple choice questions, but I guessed Esther.
Esther, okay. Chloe, what did you guess?
It's not Esther. I just didn't even know.
Okay.
I have no idea, so I wrote Joanne.
You're all wrong. It's a trick question. She was never named.
Oh.
Ha, ha, ha. Gotcha. Okay, question number 2. This one's a bit easier. In which book of the Bible do the 4 horsemen of the apocalypse appear? Scribble, scribble, scribble. Write something, Daniel. Oh, this is funny. Okay, Don, what do you got? Don?
I can't remember the name of it. It's the last book of the Bible. It's the one... Oh, okay, I see Genesis. It's not Genesis.
Chloe?
It's Revelation.
Revelations, that's the one I was thinking of.
Armageddon.
Chloe is correct. It is the book of Revelations. Yay, Chloe.
Thanks.
Okay. Question number 3. Which weapon is most often associated with Shiva? Ooh, I've thrown you off. You were all thinking biblical questions. Shiva is a Hindu god.
Fire?
Fire?
That was my guess.
That is incorrect.
I was going to say some sort of sword. Oh, it might be a bow and arrow.
No.
Damn it.
Cow.
That was my guess.
Cow.
I was going to say a shield, too, but that couldn't be.
The correct answer is a trident. Trident.
Cool.
Okay, moving on.
I fail.
What form of Buddhism does the flower sermon associate with? You're looking at me like I just shot your dog.
I wouldn't be smiling that much if you shot my dog.
Okay.
Just saying.
So, any...
No.
No?
I couldn't even begin to guess. What type of Buddhism do you mean? In which part of Asia is it centralized, or...?
It's... Okay, I'll give you a hint. It's centralized in Japan.
That's Shintoism.
No. Buddhism. What Buddhism is popular
Shinto
in Japan?
Shinto is a form of Buddhism.
It's Zen melding. Buddhism. Zen. Yeah. Zen! Oh, where's that button that makes your chair fall away? Finally...
I need one, so not too much.
One of the first documented instances of monotheism occurred in Egypt in the 14th century. What was the name of the god they worshipped? Come on!
Oh,
It's Aton, isn't it? Or Anaton?
What do you think, Chloe?
I don't know.
Daniel?
I have no idea.
I wrote your mom.
Oh, that's nice. Dawn is correct. Hooray! It is Aton. So Dawn is not as bad as...
But just to level the ground here, Ethan, because you're a historian, mm-hmm. What was the only successful political assassination of a Canadian politician in our history?
Successful assassination of a Canadian politician?
I know the answer. Just saying.
Don't we call a Canadian politician? Or I don't know. What?
Chloe?
Is it Thomas Darcy McGee?
It is. He's a member of the Ontario, or I think it was the Upper Canada at the time, a member of parliament, and he was shot in Toronto.
Interesting.
Although you could have guessed the British High Commissioner who was killed by the FLQ, but...
Well, I mean, for a long
period
of time...
That's not a Canadian politician.
British politicians were Canadian.
Yeah,
not
no. Not in
the 1970s. But whatever. Well, we're pretty much out of time. So all our listeners who played along, hopefully you did better than... these folks here.
Quick, think of more trivia questions to ask Ethan.
We have to move on.
Oh.
We have to go into our skeptical highlights here on Radio Free Thinker. I have two because, you know, obviously. October 15th, CFI Vancouver is very pleased to host another lecture by the skeptoc, Dr. Harriet Hall, entitled How to Identify Pseudoscience, Quackery, and Fraud. This will be at Langara, room A130 at 7:30 p.m. on October 15th. $7, general admission, students for $4, and CFI members for free. And of course, a big event coming up in November, November 20th, in fact, CFI is presenting a live show of the long-running, very popular science podcast, The Skeptic's Guide to the Universe, with special guest George Harab, host of the Geologic podcast. This is taking place at the Hebb Theater at UBC at 2:30 p.m., and tickets can be purchased online at www.cficanada.ca/Vancouver.
Do we know what they're going to be talking about? I hate for this to become some sort of hero worship, because, I mean, the SGU is sort of a cult figure in skepticism, and I'm sure you're
they're
telling,
a cult figure?
I'm sure you're
are
telling...
Are they worshipped?
Well, so are people to go to this because they're going to learn something, or just because it's the SGU?
Well, can it be both?
I don't know.
Well, why don't we ask them ourselves when they become a guest on this show?
Okay.
Is that going to happen?
Oh, it'll happen. Now, skeptical highlights. Anyone else?
Yeah, I'm going to throw sort of two out there. One, because I was surprised that a friend of mine, who I thought was knowledgeable, didn't know about this. But if you Google the internet and you find, Christine O'Donnell and Witch, there's been a number of things...
Are you referencing me here?
I wasn't going to mention your name, but if you want to self-identify. Anyhow, it's one of those... It's a very hilarious ad that she's put out to defend herself against her own accusations that she dabbled in witchcraft, where apparently she's trying to contradict her own statements about herself, which I just... it's a gift that keeps on giving.
This is sort of a not really skeptical highlight. Any angry feminists out there who feel like being angry for an afternoon, just watch videos of Christine O'Donnell. Just as a tip.
And the mama bears that are the new conservative feminist movement, apparently headed by Palin and O'Donnell and them.
I mean angry liberal feminists, not conservative ones. I wish to speak to you.
Are there conservative feminists?
You'd be surprised.
Really?
Yes.
Another resource I'm going to put out there, because I just finished it, is a website called GCPDB.info. It's short for Global Commodity Price Database. It's essentially a collection of price information from about 1983, I think is the latest date. Any economics or historical students out there who want to know what the price of grain was in Poland?
It saves you from reading The Wealth of Nations, which presents it so dryly.
So something to check out.
Excellent. Any other skeptical highlights? No? Okay. Well, we're wrapping up today's show. I'd like to remind our listeners to please check out our show notes, blog posts, and other things on our webpage, www.radiofreethinker.com. You can also follow us on Twitter at CITRRFT. And email us at radio.freethinker@gmail.com. What, Don, what?
No, I just noticed we have a few minutes at the end of the show, and I thought I'd put out one or two priming the well things, which we've done before. I'd like to do an episode in a few weeks' time on prostitution. And as you may have heard, that there's been a recent court case in Ontario that has changed the way prostitution is looked at. I'm sure our fans out there have an opinion either for or against prostitution. Some of you may have used the services, and some of you may have boycotted the services, who knows. But if you had any opinions, ideas about the idea of prostitution, its efficacy, its morality, its practicality, email us at radio.freethinker@gmail.com and let us know. I don't know if anyone else has a priming the well. I guess not, but...
I should actually point out that on Thursday, I'm leaving for the Secular Humanism Next 30 Years Conference in Los Angeles, and it's going to be quite the interesting experience. There's going to be a lot of secular humanists there, including people like James Randi, Sam Harris, Richard Dawkins, P.Z. Myers. I'm hoping to get a chance to talk to some of these people, in some cases again. And if you have any questions that you'd like me to ask them, or any ideas or thoughts you'd like me to share with them, please let me know, and I will do my best to bring that to their attention.
I want you to ask him if he's a closeted Buddhist.
Which one?
Sam Harris.
Okay. I will ask him that. I will ask him if he's a closeted Buddhist. Very well. We are out of time on Radio Freethinker. This is Ethan, your freethinking historian and executive director of CFI Vancouver, saying thanks for listening.
This is Don saying eyes open, minds on.
Chloe, thanks for listening.
And this is Daniel saying please email us.
At Dunkin' Donuts, each and every
radio show
is brewed fresh and served fresh at the peak of its flavor.